All right, good morning, everybody. We're going to go ahead and get started because I have a number of announcements I need to get through before we hand it over to the speakers. So welcome back to the ICMC. This morning we're presenting four tracks, and this is the certification programs track. We'd like to thank our sponsors. Without their support, this event would not be possible. Please take some time to visit with the sponsors and exhibitors in the foyer and the Hemingway Ballroom. We'll have our first break at 9:40 and a second break at 11:20. Lunch will be served at 12:40. Breaks and lunches will be served in the exhibits area in the Hemingway Ballroom. Wi-Fi is available throughout the meeting space. You'll find information on page 3 in your conference program. Conference presentation slides and audio are being posted to the conference website as they are received. Login information is on page 3 of your conference program. This evening, we'll be presenting the Cryptographic Module Game Program, a fun networking event. You'll find complete information on page 10. Your feedback is important to us. At the end of the event, we'll be sending you an email with a link to a survey. Please take a moment to let us know about your experience. Conference sessions are being audio recorded, so during the question and answer session, it's important that audience members use the microphone to address their questions, and the microphone is right there in the aisle. All right, our first presentation this morning is NIST and NIOP working together. Our two presenters are Melanie Cook and Janine Peterson. Melanie Cook is the operations team lead for the Security Testing, Validation, and Measurement Group at the National Institutes of Standards and Technology. The STVM group validates cryptographic algorithms and modules and security content automation protocol-enabled products. Melanie has an operational background that includes system engineering and security evaluation of Department of Defense field sites. She is co-author of Security Automation Essentials and has contributed to NSA's security guidance documents and NIST publications. Janine Peterson is the director of the National Information Assurance Partnership, established to evaluate IT product conformance to international standards. The program is a partnership between the public and private sectors and is implemented to help consumers select COTS ICT products that meet their security requirements and to help manufacturers of those products gain acceptance in the global marketplace. Janine has served as technical advisor for the Office of Community Outreach, which includes the Committee on National Security Systems Secretariat, Worldwide Information Assurance Community Outreach, National IA Policy, and National IA Education and Training Programs, and Interagency OPSEC Support Center. Janine was a subject matter expert in developing COTS for Secret, evolving it into the commercial solutions for classified program. As chief validator of NIAP, Janine provided technical and strategic direction for the program, working closely with NIST, NSA, and international partners. Please welcome Melanie and Janine.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Janine Peterson. I just wanted to get a sense of the audience as we're making our remarks here this morning. How many people do I have from labs, either NIST labs or NIAP labs? Couple lab personnel. Okay, and what about industry? Vendors, a good number of vendors. And I know I have some validators. How many validators or evaluators do I have in the crowd? Okay, couple. All right, great. Thank you. So what we wanted to do today is just give you an update. I know that we talked last year, and I know I talked the year before, just on the collaboration between NIAP and NIST. And so we wanted to take this opportunity to give you an update of where we are in our collaboration, some of the accomplishments that we've achieved, and also where we're heading in the future. Feel free, if you have questions, you can raise your hands. We can take them as we go, or if you want to save them into the end, that's fine as well. Okay, so this is what we're going to cover. We'll talk about our collaboration, what we've seen as the benefits and the value. Automation is a big focus for both NIST and NIAP, and then we're going to talk to you a little bit to gauge interest in a pilot that we've been thinking about. So I know you've seen this, if you've heard any of our previous talks, but the goal is to really eliminate duplication of effort. We want to try and streamline things as much as we can. We've got, in our situation, all of the NIAP common criteria test labs are also CST labs for NIST, so we've got a lot of overlap there. While the personnel are different, they are the same parent companies in all cases. So we are really trying to work together to determine how can we streamline things and make them quicker and more efficient. The ultimate goal for us is that it would be a two-way street. So as it is right now, NIAP for our evaluations, we recognize the activities conducted under CAVP and CMVP, and we give credit or check boxes if you've already got a certificate as a vendor when you come to NIAP. There are certain activities in the protection profiles for your evaluation that are already considered complete. The second piece of that is that we'd like to get to the point where NIST can recognize the activities that were conducted in our CC test labs to work toward achievement of their requirements, their CAVP and CMVP requirements. So as it is now, and I know this was brought up, I think somebody brought this up yesterday in one of the talks about how CMVP, when you get to the higher levels, levels 1, 2, 3, they now point to NIAP-approved common criteria protection profiles. It used to be EAL levels were mandated in those programs, but they've been updated, I'd say, within the last year or more to now point to approved protection profiles. So that has been corrected. That was a bit of a problem. And then, of course, we also have alignment in the protection profiles that are approved by NIAP with the CMVP DTRs and their implementation guidance. So these are some of the areas where we've gained traction. Other areas that we're still working to get full closure there. So we've heard a lot in NIAP from industry, from our test labs. They're very supportive of this alignment. We always are mindful of NIAP's role as not just a national body, but also as the U.S. representative to the Common Criteria Recognition Arrangement. And so we're always looking to gain that international acceptance and mutual recognition as well. So that's always in the back of our minds, that we in NIAP have a broad remit. National security systems, obviously, is what we're evaluating our products for here in the U.S., but we also are the U.S. representative to that international arrangement. So we have to make sure that everything we do in NIAP works not only from a U.S. perspective, but also from that broader 27-nation arrangement that we're a member of. So we see, and those of you who have participated with us in our technical communities, we collaborate heavily with NIST as we're developing cryptographic requirements. There is an international cryptographic working group that's sponsored under the CCRA committees. We have NIST's full support for that activity as well. That group is working to develop cryptographic requirements and test activities that are internationally accepted. And as you can imagine, and I know I saw in the program there are several talks related to this type of topic, but cryptography is at the heart of every nation's most sensitive areas. And so we are really breaking ground here with this working group, that we're working internationally to develop a set of requirements that all of the nations can agree upon. We look that we think this is very important work, and we have NIST support for that. And then, of course, for the protection profiles in general, we rely on the NIST documents and their DTRs as well. Nani, you wanna...
So NIST has been focused more on adopting international standards. NIST has been sending representatives to the CC events in support of NIAP and in collaboration with NIAP. And when 140-3 is released, it will point to ISO 19790, and then the test requirements document will be actually an SP 800-140, and that will be a wrapper document that will pretty much point point to 240 ISO 24759. Hopefully you saw Kim Schaefer's presentation yesterday. He went into details on exactly how all of that's going to work, and if you have questions about that, Kim actually happens to be sitting right there, so we have the guy right there. So as far as where is it now, because I know NIST has been talking about this for quite some time, I understand, in fact, the status I received early this week is that FIPS 140-3 is under review at the Department of Commerce with their general counsel department. So, and we've had a bit of turnover downtown. So we're just waiting for our turn to come up and for, to have that document reviewed and approved, and then we'll be ready to go. So one of the things that, that NIST has been working on so that we can better collaborate with NIAP is to bring our timelines, you know, shorten those timelines for the algorithm and the module validations so that NIAP is able to point to our validations and use those. Think of it, the way it would work would be building blocks, right? So we want to validate the algorithms and then the modules, and then of course, you know, the PPs are, you know, are at a higher level. But in order to be able to do that, we do need to be able to make sure that our timelines are aligned. And the way we're doing that is through automation. Our first phase of automation really was focused internally. We wanted to automate as many of our internal processes as possible, try to give our report reviewers tools in which they could be more efficient, where they could sort of standardize, you know, the level of detail under which all of the reports get reviewed. And our program manager, Jennifer Cawther, has done a fantastic job of you know, implementing much of this internal automation, process improvement, so that we can be as efficient as possible internally. But this is only one part of the whole validation process. The other part, it really is external to NIST. It's the actual testing of the algorithms, the actual testing of the modules. And this is the next phase, the externally focused phase that we're working on with respect to automation. So right now, we, with the external phase, which is in progress, we are working on building out a new infrastructure that will support sort of this merging of this hybrid program that we're going to have for a while, where we have the CAVP in its current process working along with a new automated algorithm testing program, at which point both certificates will come into sort of a business server and become published on the new CSRC website. And if you want to know more about that, come to stay in this room for the 10 o'clock session. Speaking of the algorithm testing, that automated algorithm testing is called automated cryptographic validation testing. And with this, think in terms of NIST really taking a change in the way we approach testing. And we're really approaching testing by providing services at which vendors, labs, maybe even end users could eventually connect to a service to ensure that the algorithms have been implemented correctly. And we'd like to do the same type of thing with modules. Modules is next on the list of things to do. We have a proof of concept in progress, and we'd really like to have a pilot ready to go by next year. But where we are today with automation is the algorithm automation piece actually went better than expected, I think. And we are making a transition into operations. It's in progress. And I do see that we will have that hybrid program running for at least a year or more while we are getting everyone switched over to take advantage of using the algorithm testing service. So I don't want to steal too much of the thunder from the 10 o'clock session, so I'll stop there.
Mm-hmm.
Like NIST, NIAP has done quite a few process improvements internally to ensure efficiency and consistency in our processes in what we're doing, working with our labs and our vendors. And working kind of from the bottom up on this slide, we rolled out a technical rapid response tool. That's an automated way for vendors or labs to submit technical questions associated with an evaluation or a protection profile. It's all automated. It comes in through a tool to us. The goal is, you know, a rapid turnaround on answers. I will say, since we've implemented the tool, our times for answers have gone down. I don't know if any of our labs will affirm that, but it's gone down. We usually try and get answers out in about a week, and depending on the scope and the magnitude of the question. So we call it the TERT tool, and it really it's a good avenue for people that are starting to think about an evaluation for a particular product. If they're looking at a protection profile, they don't see quite how their product might meet a protection profile or a particular requirement. This tool is a very effective way to submit a question and get a response from NIAP that's usually will hold for the duration of that evaluation. Some of those responses end up being what we call technical decisions, which then is considered mandatory for future evaluations going forward for a particular protection profile. So that's the TRRT tool. The other thing that we've done is an evaluation consistency review tool. That's an internal tool, an ECR tool. And what that does is it standardizes the way that validator comments go back to our lab. So as part of the validation, the government oversight on commercial evaluations, you know, our validators review the test evidence, the responses from the lab, and then we provide comments and feedback to the lab so that they can work through the details and complete the evaluation. So the ECR tool has been something that we have rolled out over the last couple of months. It's in early pilot phase right now, but we expect it will be fully rolled out by the end of this year, if not sooner. It will be give a consistent interface for dialogue between our test labs and our validators, which obviously helps with consistency, but it also helps us in NIAP to kind of keep better track of what's going on, you know, minute by minute on a particular evaluation, ensure that that the project is proceeding according to the schedule from both NIAP's perspective and the lab's perspective. So we see good promise in this tool. Assurance maintenance, for those of you who are familiar with it, is NIAP's process for quick turn updates to an already evaluated product. It tends to be much more quick. It's for changes to a product that are not security relevant, that don't necessitate an entire reevaluation. So this is how we get, you know, incremental updates to products out there for our national security customers to be able to procure. We also have this secure online document and data upload. That's all tied in with our other tools. That's our web interface that we use, again, for tracking evaluations, for maintaining project status. It's an online data repository there. The other piece of automation that we're working on right now, and in conjunction with industry and our labs, is this external notion of automating protection profiles. So ideally what we'd like to see is that there's an automated test suite for any given protection profile so that it really is kind of a plug and play, that a product can be run through you know, a significant number of automated tests, thereby saving time, increasing consistency, and making sure that, you know, every lab doesn't have to do a one-off and come up with their own test suites. We're not there yet. This is something that's in the very, very early stages, but it is something that we see great promise with. The first one, it looks like software app is one of the ones that we have some companies interested in automating the testing for that. Network device is another one that there's some automation work ongoing. And this is not the government driving this, so it's not NIAP driving this automation, but it really is industry driven. So we do see good promise in that. And, you know, there are other automation tools that we've heard of that, you know, allow for development of apps in an automated fashion that they would come out and you know, be ready to meet the protection profile. So we've heard from a number of different vendors and industry folks talking about how they're really trying to automate this. And we see that as, you know, as NIST has shown with their automation, it really does show good promise for making sure that these evaluations can proceed apace and are consistent. So this is our last significant slide, but we felt like this is a good one to end on. What we've talked about with NIAP and NIST is a pilot. So this is kind of, you know, our sales pitch, I guess, so to speak, to see what kind of interest there would be from industry in supporting this pilot. We've looked at what the NCCOE is doing, and we would like to actually put into practice in a very real way the notion of this collaboration that we've been fostering between our programs for the last several years. So what we'd like to do is have a prototype system built that would use, as Melanie said, the building blocks of the algorithms, the modules, evaluation against protection profiles, also using the 853 mappings that we have for all of our protection profiles, put that all together into a prototype system, and then kind of determine, you know, can we automate the assessment of conformance to 853? What kind of efficiencies can we gain? What kind of assurance do we gain when we build a system that's actually, you know, from the ground up using these building blocks that we spend a lot of time developing and that, you know, vendors have invested heavily in? So this is something, as I said, we're exploring, we're looking for interest. So if it's something that, you know, you all see as that would be worthwhile, that would be valuable, let us hear from you because we're not going to do this on our own. We really need support from others in order to make this happen. But we think that that it would be very beneficial. So one of the things that I often hear is how do you show the value of a common criteria evaluated product? How do you show a vendor that their return on investment, you know, investing in an evaluation is going to pay off in the long run for them, for their product, for, you know, their marketing purposes? How are they going to get a return on what they're investing? And so we feel like this pilot might have some promise to kind of show a little bit of how that all happens and why these different programs are valuable, what they give in the way of assurance for an overall system. Melanie, did you want to add anything to this? Okay. So that's the end of the prepared remarks. We're hoping that you all have some questions. We'd like to have a dialogue and a discussion here. Any questions or comments? Anything? Yes.
I was interested to see that you mentioned that you're no longer referencing EILs in your for the FIPS certification. I just checked just now. If you look at the implementation guidance for a software module, it still says level 2 requires EL2 certified OS or equivalent.
So I thought that's the standard. That's what the standard says. But the appendix was updated to point 2.
Okay, right. So. Okay, so Jen just chimed in there to help with this answer, and she said the standard still says that, but the appendix was updated, so, you know, and I don't know, does the appendix, how does that work between the two with the standard and appendix?
What does the appendix mean? And there's a pointer to the protection profile. We can't change the standard unless we get the Commerce Secretary to sign off on it. So the standard will not change, and it will point to the EAL2, but if you go to appendix B, it says we don't.
Okay, so the other part of my question is, many years ago I had this conversation with one of your predecessors and I said, look, we have a cryptographic module which is certified in an evaluated configuration, medium robustness back in those days, and the OR equivalent, we would like the OR equivalent to apply to our CC evaluated configuration, which obviously has self-protection, everything included in it, and we are basically told that doesn't work. So is there something, some plan, if you're working closer together, to allow the OR equivalent, to allow the self-protection as part of a CC evaluation to count for saying we have a system here, we have all the parts of the crypto as part of the evaluation, so that gives the user more assurance instead of just a cryptographic module which may not include entropy, might not include key generation?
Right. So, I mean, I would say that that's something that we'd have to look into in more detail. I can't give an answer here right now, but certainly we are looking for efficiencies as long as we can get the right assurance out of that, right? So we have to make sure that we are especially in the NIAP case where we're evaluating products for national security systems, we have to be sure in the assurance that we're gaining.
My thought is that if you're giving levels, there is no way at the moment for a user to know that all the parts of the cryptography are part of the system that's been certified.
Right, right.
And I think that is a meaning, right. Something very meaningful.
Right. And part of that, too, gets into the system versus the product level. Mm-hmm. So, we can talk offline.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hi, Jeannie. You mentioned that you will have automation test suite per PP, and I'm assuming that you guys are going to share this with the lab, but will this be shared with the industry as well?
Right. So what I mentioned in the slide was, the notion of automating some of the testing for protection profiles. Those are commercial tools, and I would say, I don't know if they're commercially available yet. We don't control the tools. We are sharing them, and I think there's at least one or two labs that are piloting the use of those tools. So I can't endorse a tool, obviously, but I would say that they are out there, and if you kind of do a search on the web, you will get some hits on what some of these tools are that are out there. It's certainly something that our labs are interested in, that they're looking into as well.
I like your concept of your pilot program, but I'm very concerned because today, when we submit an entropy report, NIAP approves it, CMBP questions it. So the two don't seem to work together. So when you bring two government agencies together, how are you two going to fight over who gets final word?
Right, and that's a valid point. We're actually looking to 890B to solve that issue, and obviously, that's something that's in the works with that standard. I think once that standard comes out, we'll be in a much better place with entropy. But I would say that the pilot would be a perfect way for us to start coming together and adjudicating that issue. I don't know what the schedule is for 890B. I always hear it's this year. So bottom line is, I hear your point, I understand the concern, and I would say that the pilot would allow us to kind of come together and say, okay, for this pilot, perhaps we don't have 890B, how are we going to resolve this, and what are we going to do to work together? And then maybe that would set the standard for moving forward until 890B comes online.
No.
That's just one part of it, though. I mean, you go to a crime scene, you get the FBI and the police. Somebody has to be in charge.
Right.
So when you bring two government agencies together, who's going to be in charge?
Right. And this is, again, a pilot, and this is something that we would have to work out. And maybe, as I'm thinking here, sorry, but if I look at this, and if we take that notion of building blocks, right, so we've got the algorithms and the modules, and then on top of that, we've got products that incorporate those modules and algorithms, and then those products are built and composed into a system. So maybe it's going to be NCCOE, now granted that's NIST, but maybe it's that at that system level that you're going to get the primacy there. Other questions?
I asked this one yesterday, but I want to see if I can get a better answer than I can from Kim. So, no hand signals, eye signals, no leading the witness.
I can tell you what I answered last time.
I warned you. NIAP with PPs and EPs tends to be going towards the ISO definitions of various cryptographic standards. FIPS is going towards the SPs. Close, but not exactly the same. So I want to make sure that when we validate something against my side from the HIP side from an SP, that when I give the stuff over to my CC colleagues, that all of a sudden they don't run up against an evaluator who says, well, that's nice, you did the SP, but now you got to do it against the ISO one. The same, but not quite the same.
Mm-hmm. Right.
How do you plan to address this?
Right. So, and I guess I could look at that at two different layers, right? I can look at that from a US perspective, and what do we do in the US? And then I know Rob's in the audience from the Netherlands, and then I can look at it from an international CCRA perspective. And when we look at this in a NIAC way, we have the notion of mutual recognition, where we, as members of the arrangement, have agreed to recognize evaluations conducted in any of those other nations. In our case, we recognize any of the evaluations, but for national security procures, they have to be conducted against a NIAP protection profile. And so the NIAP protection profiles are written in a way that that they can be used with or without FIPS, right? So a person, a vendor can come in with a product, they can go to, say, Sweden, get their product evaluated. Sweden may or may not, you know, leverage the vendor's CABP or CMVP certificates. Sweden may choose to have their labs do everything from scratch as it's outlined in the PP, and then they would bring it to us. As long as that protection profile has been met, we put that up on the PCL. So we look at it as CABP and CMVP get you further along in your common criteria evaluation. It takes, you know, you've got some checkbox already, as I said earlier. And so it gets you further along and it makes for an easier common criteria evaluation. Kim, I don't know if you said anything different or if you have anything that you would like to add.
My answer was somewhat flipped, yes. Mm-hmm. That we will use one or the other.
Right.
And, you know, it's not up to me, it's to the CT group and NIAP to decide
right.
How those are going to be addressed.
Exactly. And so I don't know if I answered your question, right? It's kind of a bit of a hedgy answer. But then the other piece of this is that it ultimately comes down to the approving authority for use of a product in a national security system, right? So in NIAP, we say, you know, these are the products that meet our protection profiles, that meet the NIAP approved protection profiles. These are the products that are on our list. But an AO may say, I absolutely have to have, you know, CMVP certificates. So if you've got a product on your list that doesn't have a CMVP certificate, I'm not going to procure that. So the one point that I always like to say is that the products on the NIAP list meet the protection profile. They meet the requirements that we've defined as important for national security systems. There is no mandate for anyone to procure those products. They are there, they are available, but we fully expect that approving authorities are going to look carefully at the products and make sure that they meet their use cases, their requirements.
So basically, our salespeople want the RFQs to see exactly what's being asked for.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Thanks, fair enough.
Mm-hmm. Sean.
Hi. So this is actually for both of you, and it pertains directly to the automation. One of the toughest pieces of doing any kind of automation is not just requesting and processing and sending back, but it's on the back end, and that's the approval or the acceptance of the evidence. How do either of you or both of you, how are you going about kind of setting some plan of how we can generate or define what those acceptable set of evidence is for each one of the requirements? Because that's, I think, the toughest thing.
Sean, I know you've been involved in the working group, so you have a little bit of an inside track here. But, for algorithms, of course, it's a bit more simple just because of the nature of the way algorithms are tested, right? So we have that evidence, as will be demonstrated, of course, in the 10 o'clock session.
Right.
Modules, you're right, it's more complicated. And I am hoping, the plan is for the evidence, the type of evidence, to become clear as we work through the proof of concept so that we can identify what can we automate for each requirement? What would that evidence look like in a way that provides assurance, you know, not only for NIST, but really for your end users, for your consumers who are using your products, for those people who are making those policy decisions. Because after we, NIST, make available the technical testing services, utilities, and processes, we are really just saying that algorithms conform, modules conform, but we really aren't saying it's okay to use them. You really do need to check with your customers, with those folks writing policy at your agencies to make sure, to see what they are going to require. So does that answer?
Yeah, and so, Deneen, could you address, since you had referred to the app protection profile is, because again, these are going to be the hardest things for any of us to address. Is we could all generate tons of evidence. Mm-hmm. How do we reconcile that?
Right. So what I would say from a NIAP perspective, and these are early stages, right? We've got some of these tools that are in very early stages. I think they're getting piloted in at least one or two labs, and we would look to these initial efforts to say with our, you know, sit down with our validators and say, what kind of evidence did you see? And of course, first the CCTLs will have to say, yep, this meets our requirements. Assuming they get what they want, then we will go to the next level, which is the validators. What, you know, here's what you're getting, where does this fall short, where do you need more or less, and how can we evolve this to a point where we can then kind of standardize. So it's not going to start out initially where we can crisply define exactly what needs to come out, but it's going to be an evolution where we get to the point of saying, okay, this is kind of what we need, this is our baseline of what type of evidence, this is what we expect, and that's the goal with all of this automation, is to be able to kind of standardize on what gets put out and the data that's produced.
So if I can have a follow-on question. Uh-huh. Are both of you also then looking already to taking this further into the international community and not just in the U.S., since both of you represent U.S.,
right, right.
But are you both looking to do this the same thing in the international?
We certainly would be, because that only improves the strength of the recognition arrangement, right? So the more standardized process and output we can get, the more, you know, the stronger that arrangement is, because then we have just that much more confidence that every nation that's doing these evaluation is doing them to the same level and producing the same type of information. So that's our goal, certainly, with the international work.
Are the other countries seem open to that?
I have to say that we haven't discussed this too much
too
with the other countries yet, yeah. Because we're still fledgling here in the U.S. with it, but I would assume they would be.
Sorry, Sean, I was just going to chime in. So, you know, as we are developing and automating these testing services, there's nothing to say that another country couldn't set up their testing service. I mean, what's happening behind the scenes for the service is transparent, right? You know, what's to prevent a vendor from, on their client side, reaching out to the U.S. service, getting their validation there, and then you're just hitting another country's, you know, validation service, okay. You know, computer to computer, to get your validation there. I mean, I'm not saying that's how it will work. I'm just saying, what would prevent that, right?
So it's a natural progression, I think.
I think
yeah.
So.
Thank you.
I'm happy to see that both NIST and NIAP are working together after many years. For the past few years, we are working together. That's a nice, good sign, and it's helpful to us, both as lab as well as vendors, and to the industry as such. But there are a few things where I see that there is a little discrepancy. One of them is the CAVP certs. Many times we have situations where in FIPS the CAVP certs can be reused, but if you are doing the same product, same version number and for common criteria as well, but the certificates don't have the exact version number of the product, CMVP accepts the old certificates, whereas CC does not. So there seems to be some discrepancy, and I'm sure you're aware of it as you're nodding, Janine. So what can be done about that?
So I'll use this as a pointer. Diane's giving a talk at 10 o'clock, and she's going to talk a little bit more about NIAP's Policy 5, which is our cryptographic policy. And that talks a lot about what we expect in NIAP from vendors who are claiming compliance to, you know, CAVP or CMVP. I know that there are discrepancies. Whenever we bump into these discrepancies, we're always talking to NIST to say, here's what we think, what do you think? That said, our processes are not completely aligned. So there are certain things in NIAP where we might be more stringent, as you say, you know, exact versioning. And that stems from the fact that we are putting these products out for our national security system. So we look at this as our most sensitive national systems are procuring these products, And so we have certain requirements that we hold, you know, that we hold fast to, which is, you know, we want to make sure that the certificates for the cryptographic algorithms and modules are exactly the same as what's in that common criteria evaluated product. But we do try, to the best of our ability, to align and work closely together.
The subsidiary of that question is, NIST is also serving the same, base that you're serving, right? So as NIAP is serving. So when the same two the programs are serving the same community of the DoD, one is acceptable and the other one is not acceptable. One has to be truly, you know, conformant, exact conformance, the other one is not. So right. This is where my issue comes in.
Right, right. And I understand that. And I don't know how Melanie will speak to it, but I will say that that was a programmatic decision that we made. I feel it was the right decision to make for us at the time, which was that exact conformance needs to be there. It's certainly something that we kind of look at all the time. And as you know, Nithya, having gone through this, I would say over the last couple of years, there's certainly been a learning curve both within NIAP in our validation community with our labs as far as when we started increasing the rigor around what certificates could be claimed to meet requirements in our protection profiles, there has been a learning curve. There has been the need for careful scrutiny of the certificates that are claimed to make sure that what's in that security target for the common criteria evaluation is actually reflective of what's been certified by NIST. So it is something that I think we're gaining traction. I think our labs, and certainly our validators, I know, but our labs as well, now have a better sense of the expectation. And so, you know, always something that we review. We're happy to take input. But for now, that exact compliance is where we are right now. But you can go to the 10 o'clock talk too and hear, what Diane has to say. She's not going to say anything different. But.
Okay. I have one more question, may I?
Final question.
Okay.
Nithya, you
anybody
always
else?
Close us out.
Anybody else? Okay. The second question is about automation. So, Janine, you mentioned that there are multiple, vendors who are creating some kind of a tool for automation for CCE testing. Are all the validators going to be aware of what it is produced? My biggest issue is this. Now, I'll give you the scenario, right? Today we have two, supposing there are two vendors. Tomorrow, as this tool becomes more and more famous, there are multiple vendors and multiple independent vendors who produce these tools. Right. Now, our issue would be the validators, all the validators, because there are several validators, several evaluations. They're not aware of all the tools, obviously.
Right.
So how do we face that situation? What do we do in that situation?
Right, and I think that was kind of the notion of Sean's question as well, is how do we know that when a lab runs one of these automated test suites, that our validators, that NIAP is going to be able to accept those results as valid? And so we talked about this a little bit at our workshop, but I think the idea is that hopefully we would survey the landscape, see what tools are out there, and while NIAP can't endorse tools, I think that the community at large would kind of come together around certain tools or a certain set of tools that really seem valid to meet those requirements and truly automate the PP. So again, I think it's going to be a progression. I think it's probably going to be a winnowing out to get to the tools that really add value, that provide data and information that's useful in validations, but that's just going to be a progression over, you know, as these tools are developed and put into use.
All right. Thank you once again.
All right. Thank you, Melanie and Janine, for a great presentation.